You're listening to Scopes Monkey Choir. Music in a rational universe.
Scopes Monkey Choir.
Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
Episode.
Oh my god, I couldn't even sing the tune to that song that I've listened to like 64,000 times in my life. It's terrible.
Well, you are terrible.
64, that's all I meant.
Episode 64, this is the podcast where music and sound meet science and skepticism.
And really bad singing.
And, well... So, announcement.
Announcement? You better talk quick there, mister.
We are now part of the Science 360 network.
Science 360!
Yeah. Science 360 is a project of the National Science Foundation, and they are at Science...
Wait, the government?
What? Yes.
We're part of the government
now?
We
are now part of the government, yes.
Ooh.
We're on the take now from the government, from Big Pharma, and Big Cyclops. No, wait.
Big Psyops?
Psyops? I don't really know what I meant by that. So
where's my check? That's all I want to say.
Science 360 is by the National Science Foundation. Their website, science360.gov. They have videos, but then they also have a radio, 24-hour radio station, which is all science all the time.
360, 24.
Something like that. So, anyway, we're part of that now. They don't seem to have a schedule. They seem to just sort of stream things as they come in.
All around you, all the time.
Science 4D. And so, thanks to them for including us. We are honored and we are amongst many
among
far
all these
more
jokes,
talented podcasts. And
we're on a radio show.
What?
We're on a government radio show.
We are, yes.
That's so cool.
Yeah. So check that out, science360.gov/radio. And on to the news. We're just going to talk about a couple things today.
News from the monkey scope.
Yeah, so starting with the nano ear.
Ooh. I have nano ears.
You have?
They're very small. You're Are they smaller than my ears?
You're just going to be trouble tonight, aren't you?
Trouble. No, the nano ear, it's so cool. It's basically the smallest microphone ever made.
Right. Now, unfortunately, it's still kind of a prototype. It's not really like, you know, like the headlines that you see like are all like nano ear and can listen in on bacteria, you know, and they're not doing
Eventually
that
Eventually, it might be able to Eventually listen in on bacteria if all goes well.
Yeah.
It's very cool, though. It's what, like a single gold molecule? Or four gold molecules?
I don't know how many atoms
together?
Are involved.
Atoms,
but yeah,
sorry,
it's just basically a little tiny bit of gold, which is suspended in a laser beam. They borrowed the idea.
That doesn't sound like for real.
Well, they borrowed the idea from optical tweezers, which have been around for a while. And basically the idea is that you take the tiny, tiny, tiny piece of gold and you suspend it in lasers and you basically are holding it in place so it can't move.
Because of the electromagnetic field created by the laser. It's not that it's like riding on light. Or actually, I guess it kind of is.
Well,
but there's
is,
a small
anyway.
Electromagnetic field created by the laser and it's enough to hold those molecules in place.
Right. So then when you put that thing near something else, if it makes a tiny sound, a little tiny sound.
A little vibration.
That can be, yeah, it's a vibration. If that's just enough to move the little particle of gold, then you have yourself a microphone.
Because it's sitting there suspended in the laser, not moving at all.
Right. And now in their
tests. Touching anything?
Yeah, they call it acoustic microscope, which I thought is a kind of a nice term.
It's a micro acoustic microscope that is also a microphone.
No, wait. It's a micro microphone.
It's a micro microphone, yeah.
Scope.
That's why they call
Monkey
it a nano ear. Does
yeah.
two micros make a nano?
I'm not. Don't you start.
Are we done with this topic yet?
Well,
oh,
no,
but they
I
have
wanted
a,
to say.
Right. The reason it's not... really, you can't listen in on bacteria yet is basically that they can only, for now, they've only figured out how to use it in an environment where nothing at all is moving, because everything that moves near it is picked up by it. So they're doing tests where they basically are putting another little tiny nano chunk of gold next to it in another laser field, and then they're shooting another laser at that one to make it heat up just enough to create
a wiggle,
a little wiggle, and then it picks up that little wiggle because there are no other wiggles anywhere in its environment. So basically, that's why it's
so at the moment they
just
have
a
it,
prototype.
They have it calibrated so it apparently can pick up a sound which is the equivalent of negative 60 decibels. Now, this is a very quiet sound. You regular listeners may recall that the decibel sound scale is based on the idea that zero decibels is the quietest sound that a human ear can hear. Right?
Right, which is why you get negative decibels and it doesn't mean nothing.
Right. But at the same time, the decibel scale is logarithmic. So negative 60 decibels is, they're estimating that basically this thing can pick up a sound that is a million times fainter than anything a human ear can hear, which is a lot quieter, in my opinion. It's just an opinion. Layman's opinion. Wait a minute.
I'm trying to say that I'm speechless, but you're not letting me get the words in edgewise.
But you're speechless because I'm interruptus. So the next hurdle they have to get over is that they have to figure out how to distinguish actual sound vibrations from the occasional random movement that happens at the molecular scale. And
that actually, the occasional random movement of the trapped molecule that's not supposed to be moving at all.
Yeah, it basically, I mean, down at that scale, like, the concept of sound starts to get kind of fuzzy.
Yeah, kind of quiet.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see where they go with this, if they indeed go anywhere at all. I hope someday we'll be able to play you a recording of a bacteria in action. We are not.
A bacterial song.
Yeah, we are not quite there. Wouldn't that be weird if they finally do it and they set it up and they turn it on and it's like, ooh, hey.
It would be like Eddie Izzard and his speeding up the whale songs.
No, I don't remember that one.
I love you, baby.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Oh, it's my night to sing pop songs badly. We should move on to the next topic.
Okay.
Oh,
the sky
next topic.
Noises. All right. Now, we've been avoiding the sky noises. So, as you may, if you listen to other skeptical podcasts, you probably know about the sky noise phenom. In the past couple months on YouTube, there are now, like, worldwide, there are all these videos of people reporting these crazy apocalyptic sounds in the sky. And this has been covered by other people, so we're not going to get too far into it.
Are you sure that everyone hasn't forgotten about this because of the video of the baby mammoth?
No, I'm telling you, there are new ones every day. There are tons of them out there. So they basically have a video of someone, usually like in their backyard or in the woods or something like that, and they're like, oh, what is that crazy sound? Listen. And then you hear in the background these apocalyptic sounds All right. I don't want to get into this. This is where me as a skeptic, like, that I lose it, because this is so far from being evidence of anything that I just don't know where to begin. And it's just amazing to me that there are people that are actually taking these things seriously. The idea that you have a video, you know, we have a visual image, and that then there's a sound, that the idea that that's evidence, that sound actually being part of the video, like, and not being manipulated, is so ridiculous to me. It's sort of one step further than of course, we know visually we can manipulate, we can basically make video look like anything at this point, but, like, sound, we've been able to do fake sound on video and film and such for, like, decades and decades.
Since it existed.
Yeah, and it's just, like, I don't get why.
The sound has always been separated from the image, always.
So, and what, I mean, one reason I did want to finally address it too is that actually one of the popular videos, the person who made it actually has just come forward and has said, okay, enough is enough. Here's how I did it. And it's very simple. The way she did it is she took one of the other videos. She took her mobile phone video camera, and then she had her laptop. And she took video pointing away from her laptop, and then on her laptop, she played one of the other crazy sky noise videos. So
why are we still talking about this?
Well, because it's, you know, it's skepticism and sound. We had to talk about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, we did.
But, you know, as others have pointed out, a lot of them are just totally lame. Like, some of them use the sounds from the movie Red State, which, by the way, I agree with Rebecca, is really not a very good movie.
Rebecca Watson.
Yeah. And War of the Worlds, which I actually think, unlike everyone else, was a good movie, except for the ending. There was one of them, too, which sounded as an electric guitarist. Like, I think it's a Fender twin reverb amp being messed with. I think those are the apocalyptic sounds.
What about Close Encounters? What has anybody played? What is that little tune? Do, 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 do.
Yeah. I haven't heard that one yet.
Simon. Huh? Aren't those the notes of Simon? Everybody remember Simon?
Do, do, yeah. What? No, but Simon was, you mean the game?
Yeah, the thing where you have to push the
notes were different every time. I mean, the melody was different every time. That was the whole point.
Is it my Nokia ring? No.
Oh, don't start with the Nokia rings. And then there's another
one. I have a Nokia phone still.
One of the original videos that got a lot of attention is the one that takes place in a evergreen forest in the winter. There's snow all over the place, yet as part of the apocalyptic sounds, you hear all these like birds singing, and they're like all these birds singing, and it's just like, you know, if you've spent any time in a forest in the dead of winter, you know that there aren't birds tweeting like all over the place. It's just not. I mean, it's, but people are. I know we're. We shouldn't talk.
I heard the trumpet of judgment twice, two nights in a row.
When?
Well, I was singing Mendelssohn's Elijah.
Mm-hmm.
It comes right in the middle, right before an angel sings.
So did the world end?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't notice.
Yeah.
Well, what's that? Right when I was talking about the trumpet of judgment. What is that?
I don't know. Is it coming from outside?
I can't tell.
Oh, wow, that's...
Whoa, what was that? Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I'm sorry, I have to go check.
All right, see, but that's the thing. You know that stupid little harp that we have, that little like Celtic fake Celtic harp.
Are you calling my teenage harp stupid?
I am kind of, yes. I took that and I recorded a sound and I slowed it down and I added some reverb. That's
cool.
That's all that is.
Good job.
Right?
That's pretty apocalyptic.
Yeah. So
the harps of the apocalypse. I don't know if that doesn't really.
Well,
isn't
the harps
that
come after the apocalypse and you go to heaven in the harps. No, but it's just. It makes me mad because there are all sorts of things to get excited about in this world, in this very, very exciting universe. And the idea that just putting a sound on a video is evidence of anything is just, I just can't take it. Sometimes I just can't take it.
Is that a UFO? Oh, we have some actual science to talk about here. Don't we?
Yeah.
Some more actual science. Oh yeah, the singing glove. Mm. The singing glove.
Voice glove.
This is something that some scientists at the University of British Columbia just developed and designed. This is Sidney Fells and John T. Wong and Bob Pritchard, engineers and musicians. Developed a glove that they presented at the
AAAS.
What does that stand for? Anyway,
American Association for the Advancement of Science.
Ha! Right, they just presented it. It was in Vancouver. And it is a glove they're calling a voice.
It's called GRASP, which stands for Gesturally Realized Audio, Speech, and Song Performance. GRASP. Ooh. Grasp.
So, in some ways, this is just kind of harnessing the motion capture technology that we all have, say, in iPhones or in the Wii.
Mm.
Or in, yeah, So little accelerometers and things that Mari Kimura was talking about it in the episode where we interviewed her. She has a motion capture glove that she plays with her violin. And basically, it's just another technology that you can hook up to anything you want on... to anything you want, really, these days.
It's a variation on the various new input devices that everyone's playing with.
Exactly. Thank you for explaining in words that are technologically relevant.
I guess that's what I'm here
for. So in this case, they've hooked it up to various sounds that correspond to the sounds that the human voice articulation mechanism can make. So all the vowels and the different consonants that we can make using our vocal cords and larynx and lips and teeth. So they have mapped onto two gloves. They have the vowel space mapped onto the right-hand glove, and you basically move your hand around in space, and as you move it forward in the relevant space, it's more like E, and as you move it back, it's more like ah. And it kind of corresponds to the opening and closing of the vocal cavity as you mm-hmm. make vowels. Mm-hmm. And then when you close the fingers, it makes the fricative vowels like f and v and s. And then the popped vowels are on the left hand. You touch each finger to get different things like b and p.
Right.
Duh.
Now, and I thought that was interesting that they made that a separate input, because those sounds are produced by like suddenly pushing out some
plosives.
Air.
They're called plosive.
Yeah. Consonants. Yeah, because you're actually like you're pushing out some built up pressure from your mouth, and with the hand that they designed for the different vowel shapes, they couldn't get it was just easier to just make a separate glove that is basically controlling the air, as it were.
Right.
This would be a good time to just play. Here's a short sample of the glove just being demonstrated. Yeah. So that's what was the name? Jaunty. I love that name, Jaunty. I don't know if that's how you pronounce it. But.
It's spelled Johnty, but it's a Chinese name.
Yeah.
So it's like jaunty or something. Yeah, I don't know the jaunty intonation.
Jaunty.
Jaunty, yeah.
Anyway. So the height, what is it? They also have 3D position centers, and they can tell where in space the glove is, because that affects the pitch. And then they have a foot pedal, which controls the volume. So this means that, like, actually just moving your two hands and you're working the foot pedal, you can control the volume, the pitch, the consonant sound, the vowel sound, all these things. You basically can completely imitate speech and singing.
Well, the thing is, it's the synthesized sounds in the computer that's imitating speech and singing. You're just manipulating the details of what's coming out.
Well,
so as
yeah,
you
of
said,
course,
it's another
course.
Input device. And as the reporting points out, it's basically like learning to speak and sing all over again using your hands and feet. So in a way, it's even more complicated than playing an instrument, because you're controlling all the incredible variables of the human vocal tract that we talked about before in our episode on the vocal tract.
Mm-hmm.
And they're saying that, you know, it's a lot of trouble to learn how to play. They originally developed it for people with who, for one reason or another, can't use their vocal tracts, so that they could try that they could actually make noise and start to speak. But then either one of the scientists or a musician, a composer, saw the musical potential in this, and they added a lot of detail and the ability to sustain the vowel sounds, so that you can actually just sing with it the same in a similar way that you sing with your voice. Except that in most people who can speak normally, the singing and speaking voice is totally unconscious control or subconscious control, and only right. when you train your voice do you learn to take control over all the little details, or well, over even some of the little details of how your voice is producing sound.
Right.
So the 100 hours that you would spend learning to play this thing are like learning to beak all over again. Mm-hmm. I think this is totally fascinating to think about. It's fascinating to think about people who already know how to sing. Uh-huh. And people who have already trained their voices and taken some conscious control over their vocal mechanism. Remember how we talked maybe in the very first episode about the brain scans of opera singers? Mm-hmm. We made fun of the opera singers in the fMRI machine.
Right.
And how they discovered that opera singers have control over their voices in a way that other people have control over their exterior limbs. Like they're using parts of their brain to work their vocal cords that are more frontal lobe conscious control that most people don't use.
Right. In other words, when you train as a vocalist, you actually gain control over some muscles and areas that normally are not actually within.
Not really in conscious control.
Right. Yeah.
So this is like an. And some of the researchers actually say this on the publicity material. This is like embodying the voice. You're suddenly using your hands that you can see mm-hmm. to control a voice that has many of the capabilities of the one in your larynx, but it's exterior. And you all on the podcast can't see this, but I'm at this very moment sort of talking with my hands mm-hmm. out here in this way that makes... That sort of visualizes the sounds coming out of my vocal tract. And I really wonder what it's like to use this as a trained singer when you sort of understand the placement of vowels within your own head and mouth, and whether the placement of the hands corresponds in any way to that, and whether the seeing of what you're doing with the different consonants is easier for people who already have taken this kind of conscious control over
it? Yeah, I mean, what you're saying is that you'd love to try it.
I would love to try it, and I would love to see singers and non-singers try to learn it.
Right.
And I also think it's fascinating because as singers, people who train as singers often have difficulties with certain musical things that people who play instruments don't have, because when you're playing an instrument, you can look at what you're doing.
Right.
And change it by looking at it. And it's a quite different mechanism from the way our voice works. You often have to work with metaphor and all kinds of psychological things in order to change the way your voice sounds, especially when you're first starting out. And lots of people end up embodying that in the rest of their body. Like when you tell someone to lift their soft palate, which is what happens when you yawn. Mm. Most people never think about what they're doing with their soft palate, and usually at the beginning are unable to consciously manipulate it. And you mm-hmm. have to do things like actually yawn 10 times and think about what's happening in your mouth. And a lot of people end up like lifting their hand up when they're trying to lift their soft palate.
Mm-hmm.
Or like...
basically trying to learn to be your own puppet master.
Exactly. Yeah. And we talked about that too in our episode on the voice.
Yeah.
So I wonder whether the things that we do to try to manipulate our own voices in our larynxes, the things we do with our elbows and our eyebrows and our toes, whether they in any way correspond to what you have to do with this glove. Or whether it's like yet another layer of learning how to control something consciously.
Yeah. Basically, you want to try it.
And I want to see singers try it and non-singers try it.
No, I mean, I have to admit I'm less impressed than you. I mean, I think this is kind of cool. We should play a little bit of a singer singing, doing a duet with herself with the glove.
Oh, yeah. I gotta say, one thing they might have to solve is just the sheer unpleasantness of its singing voice.
Well, I think what they're doing is interesting. I personally think that at least at the moment seems to have more obvious use with people like hearing impaired people, for instance, or sort of medical things rather than artistic things. Because I mean, you're kind of like. Yeah, okay, the singer can do a duet with herself, but you could also get two singers.
Or you could get a singer to play an accordion.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really, like, artistically, I don't... besides the fact that you have a new way of making sound, which artists do have a tendency to take a new thing and do something cool with it that no one anticipated. So, yes, maybe it will, but you have... I mean, alright, let's put it this way. It's not like the theremin. Like, seeing someone work with this is a little bit like the theremin, when you're moving your hands to make the sounds, but not in this sort of obvious instrument way. But the theremin makes a sound which is totally different, and especially when it came out, was a totally new sound, and really, like, is an instrument that does something that could not be done beforehand. This, so far, is trying to imitate the human voice, which actually human beings are pretty good at using already.
I wonder if they can, like, program in different voices. Like, could we program in Pavarotti so we could sing a duet with Pavarotti whenever we wanted to?
Or, yeah, or you could program it in so when you talk, it actually sounds like the GPS lady from Britain. You know, when you get the GPS directions.
Oh, I love the GPS lady.
Or the Scottish one is pretty good, too.
All right, have we run this subject into the ground?
I think, yeah, once we start talking about GPS, it's probably time to...
Thank you for listening to Scopes Monkey Choir.
Kill the kitten. From scopesmonkeychoir.com.
We are professional musicians.
Not scientists. Please check anything we say that you don't believe.
Look it up.
Nevertheless, each episode's page at scopesmonkeychoir.com has references and citations. We love feedback. Feedback, right to Scopes
Monkey. The kind that you send us, not the kind that happens when the guitar is too loud.
Oh, good point. Never. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Actually, you kind of love that kind of feedback, too.
The email address.
ScopesMonkeyChoir@gmail.com.
Why? Or call the monkey phone and leave a message, 347-788-0330. I'm sorry, we haven't played any... monkey phone messages in a while. The traffic's kind of died down on the monkey phone. Hasn't been too much.
Call up the monkey phone if you want to be on the podcast
with
us. Yeah,
we don't play everything, you know, sorry, but, you know, anyway. And I tweet at Squid Octo, but I'm kind of off at the moment because I'm too busy.
I tweet at Scopes Monkeys, usually on Sunday morning during the sermon. Oh, yeah, I sing professionally in a church choir. It's not... I'm being paid to be there, so all of you who have been asking me why I'm in church on Sunday,
it's
for the paycheck, and also the jokes I can make on Twitter during the sermon.
So, kiss, kiss, love to you all, can't wait to kiss you all, kiss, kiss, wait.
What? Why are you kissing all our listeners
now?
I'm
just wondering if anyone's still listening. Probably not.
Bye!
All right, let's get out of here.